I think you'd agree this world is messed up. How do you go from a perfect world in the garden to the one we find ourselves in now? Genesis chapter 3 explains that for us, and that's where we're headed today on The Balanced Word.
Wake up my soul, wake up early in the day, wake up my hand, and the instrument I play, wake up my voice, let the world hear me say, you are worshipped and exalted here today.
The Bible warns that Satan is our adversary, our enemy, and he's seeking whom he may devour. Maybe you think, hey, I don't have any enemies. I'm just trying to get along. Well, God's word would beg to differ. So you want to be aware of this very real and present danger. As it said, forewarned is forearmed. Well, today on The Balanced Word, we'll begin to expose the tactics of our enemy through a study of Genesis chapter 3. We're going through the Bible in stories right now with Pastor Dave Rolfe. So let's jump right in, shall we?
We're going through the Bible and looking at the stories. Some of the, just these great stories of what happened as God relays the story to us. Some people have said that Genesis chapter 3 that we're going to look at today is the most important chapter in the Bible. And I'm not sure if I'm buying into that, but I understand why they would say that, because it is the pivotal chapter of the Bible for sure. Because the first two chapters, as we looked at creation last week, it brings us to a world that's just amazing. It's perfect. God says it's very good. And that's where we end chapter 2. And then if you skip to chapter 4, you have the first literal death. You have the first two kids who were ever born. One of them kills the other one. And pretty much the rest of the Bible and the rest of human history is just a complete mess. It's just a reminder of whatever happened from the Garden of Eden to now. And let's face it, we are living in the aftermath of that. Genesis 3 explains how you go from a perfect world to this one. And so it is incredibly pivotal for us and important. So the story goes like this. The end of chapter 2. God had created this beautiful world, and he made Adam and Eve, and they were perfect for each other. And each of them was the only one that the other one had even seen or known, and so Eve was the most beautiful thing that Adam had ever seen, and Adam was the greatest guy Eve had ever met, because they had never met anyone else. They were put in the Garden of Eden. Now, don't think of it as like a little garden where the walls would be closing in on you or something. It had four major rivers flowing from it. It was probably hundreds of acres. It had all this wildlife, and animals wouldn't hurt you. They would be your friend. It had everything that you could ever want to eat. It was full of fruit trees, and God had told them, you can do anything you want. Here you go. He said, there's just one tree. The tree of the knowledge of good and evil, just don't eat that. And they're like, okay, yeah, I mean, we can eat anything else. Yeah, you can pull up a plant out of the ground and eat it. It'll be fine. There's nothing poisonous. There's nothing wrong. No thorns. Just go for it. What an amazing environment that must have been. And they're perfect. And not only that, God hung out with them. God would show up in the afternoon, and they'd just go for a walk through this beautiful garden and talk, and they could ask questions, and they were in charge. You know, Adam had named all the animals, so he knew who they were, and I mean, what an adventurous place, what a beautiful place, what a glorious place. At the end of the chapter, at the end of chapter 2, it says that the man and woman were naked and unashamed. In other words, they had no self-consciousness at all. They had no self-esteem problems. They didn't, you know, no sense of embarrassment. It was so beautiful and it was so pure. I mean, I was thinking about this week, one day when I got out of the shower and looked in the mirror and I go, what a shame. But it wasn't like that for them. It was like, man, this is awesome. And then chapter 3 happens. Something disrupted the apple cart of all that God had created. So the story begins to develop. It's, you know, here they are. They're in Eden. It's awesome. One rule, that's it. But a snake shows up in the beginning of chapter 3. A serpent. The word that's used there is a word that was typically used for snake, but I don't know if it was a snake exactly like snake that we have. It becomes obvious that ultimately this talking snake is the devil is behind it somehow. Later on in 2 Corinthians, Paul talks about the serpent, Satan, who tempted Eve. So we know that's who he is ultimately. But if you're seeing the story, here's Adam and Eve. They're just like, great, everything's awesome. And Eve's talking to a snake. The snake's talking to her. Now, there are some people who have said that maybe she wasn't surprised because maybe all the animals could talk back then before the fall. I don't know. Dr. Doolittle, a theologian, suggested that. But people don't know who Dr. Doolittle is anymore. Sorry. Guess they haven't found a way to merchandise him to the next generation yet. But she's there talking to him. And the snake's like striking up a conversation. It says that of all the animals, he was the one that was the slickest. He was the salesman of the animals. He was clever. And he just slides up to her and he says, "So, how's it going?" She's like, "Oh, look at it. I mean, we have everything we could ever want." And he goes, "So, I hear you're not allowed to eat of the trees." She goes, "Oh, no. We can eat of the trees. It's just that one tree of the knowledge of good and evil. We're not even supposed to touch it." And I don't know if God had said that or if Adam just, because what we read in chapter 2 is God said, if you eat that, you're going to die. That day, death comes. But he probably told Eve, "Look, don't even touch it. I know you." So she adds that in. She's like, "Nah, just that one tree. I don't even touch that." And so then the serpent says, "Why?" She goes, "Oh, we'll die." "Well, what's death? Nothing's ever died. What does that even mean?" And then he says, "You're not going to die. Come on. That's preposterous. I mean, look at your life. You're fine. And look at that tree. It's kind of cool." But he says, "Here's the thing. Not only will it not kill you, it's going to taste really good. It's going to make you like God. God is messing with you. God wants to keep you on the farm. God wants to keep you in your place. If you eat that fruit, he knows you're going to be like him. You're going to know good and evil. You're going to know things that you never imagined when you eat that fruit." It was partly true. But he's just saying that, and then he like slides off, and she's thinking about it. And so then she goes over and she starts looking at that tree. Probably when she was talking to Adam, maybe Adam wasn't there with her, but then Adam's with her as she goes and gets this fruit. And she takes a piece of the fruit, probably wasn't an apple. I'm thinking it was a kumquat or something, but that's not a fruit, right? So she takes it, and she's going, "Whoa, I bet that tastes really good." And she says, "Not only that, it's a good-looking fruit. And here's the kicker. What if it really is the shortcut to me becoming smarter? I've been feeling kind of inferior to Adam because he's always telling me about everything that happened before I was around. What if this will make me wise?" So there were three things. She saw it, and it looked like, ooh, this will taste good. That's kind of in 1 John chapter 2. He talks about all temptation as being the lust of the flesh. Ooh, this will taste good. The lust of the eyes, this looks good. And the pride of life, this is going to make me something special. It's always the way the devil works. That's how temptation works. When Satan came and tempted Jesus, remember, he first said, "You hungry? Yeah, I've been fasting for 40 days. Turn those rocks into bread. Boy, wouldn't some bread taste good right now?" The flesh. And then he takes him up on a mountain. He shows him all these cities. He's like, "You want those? Look pretty good, huh?" Tried to tempt him with the eyes, what it would look like. And then ultimately he told them, throw yourself down. Angels will pick you up and everybody's going to know who you are. That's what you came for, right? The pride. And so Eve looks at the fruit. It's like, bet it tastes good, looks good, and it'll make me wise. And so she took it and she ate it. She ate a bite of it. And then Adam was with her at this point, and he took a bite of it too. And all of a sudden, in that perfect environment, everything is messed up. Everything goes wrong. It's like, what is going on here? And they, for the first time in their lives, felt ashamed. They looked at each other, and maybe they were like, I don't look the same as you or whatever, but they had this shame. And there was fear. They had never experienced fear before. All of a sudden, now there's this sense of dread of what was going to happen. They were embarrassed, and so they made clothes for themselves out of fig leaves, which really, you don't want to wear a fig leaf outfit. And they hid themselves. They could no longer feel like, I'm good. I can go wherever I want to go. They hid. And then God came along, and he would apparently show up in the late afternoon, and they would talk. And he shows up, and they're not there where he usually met them. Now, God knew where they were, and he knew what happened, but he came after them, and he called to them, and he said, hey, where are you guys? And then Adam was like, well, you can't hide from God. So he calls out, he goes, yeah, you kind of came at a bad time. We're naked. This is kind of embarrassing. And God said, really? Who told you you're naked? How did you even know what naked meant? How did you know what it means to feel embarrassed? And then he said, did you eat of the tree that I told you not to eat of? There's the critical question. You've done what you've done. Now, are you going to own up to it? And Adam and Eve did what we so often do. Instead of just going, oh, God, I don't know what to do. I did it. It was stupid. What do we do? Instead, they played the blame game. God's talking to Adam, and Adam goes, oh, you want to know what happened? The woman that you gave me, thank you very much, kind of made me do it. And then God looks at Eve and she goes, that snake that you made, I mean, he's really smart. Your creation, you know. He made me do it. The snake's like, you know me. It's so interesting that their response to God looking for them was for them to play the victim card, to turn on each other. Here's this couple that, like, they were created for each other. There's nobody else. And yet they're blaming each other. Their fellowship is broken. They've lost something really dear. And now they're going, it's not my fault. Adam's going, it's Eve's fault, but actually, technically, God, it's your fault because you let this happen. You gave me this kind of a woman. I had no idea. Eve's like, it wasn't for the snake. I would have never done it. I'm a victim. It's not my fault. It's a critical point for us to understand because I'm not saying that no one's a victim. I mean, people are victims of all kinds of things. And in reality, I understand what Adam's saying. He's like, God, I mean, she's the only woman for me, literally. And so she did this, and you gave her to me, and I mean, you're supposed to know everything. So I feel like I had no choice. She ate, I kind of had to go along with it. True. The woman. If you hadn't let that talking snake into the garden, then this wouldn't have happened. So I can look at it and say, Adam and Eve were both victims. But ultimately, what good does that do you? Because if you are living with the self-identity of victim and you're blaming somebody else, what can you do about it? See, the challenge that we have in life, We're all victims of all kinds of stuff. But the question is, will I take responsibility for what I have done? Because no matter who victimizes me, I still have an opportunity to make choices about how I'm going to respond to that. And I have the ability to respond in a way that's constructive and that's best. If I don't do that, if I don't take responsibility for my own actions, then I'm left with like, oh, poor me. See, because whatever you're a victim of, you can't change that. It happened. The challenge to you is to be responsible and do the best you can do with what you have. They didn't really understand that. They didn't take responsibility. Instead, they resorted to blame. So God had to hold them accountable. There would, and there always are, consequences to sin. Now, we talk a lot about freedom. And we love the fact that, oh, let's be free. And you know, God creates man with a free will. And it's really true. I don't think God programs us like robots and makes us do what we do. If so, in Genesis 3, I'm really confused. It's one thing to be deterministic today because the world's all complicated. But let's take it right back to the beginning. Did God want them to do that? Is this part of his will? No, God grants people a certain level of freedom. But in the freedom, he doesn't say you don't have to suffer consequences of your choices. So for every one of us, I am free to do what I want, but I am not free to escape the consequences of what I choose to do. So that's their situation. And God says, there's a price that's going to be paid. I told you that death would be a result, and death is going to be happening from now on. You started to die the moment you ate that fruit because you established a certain precedent, and there are going to be consequences. There has to be. And so he began to lay out for them, kind of in the form of curses, here's what's going to happen as a result of what you did. Look at verse 14. He starts off with the serpent. And he said to the serpent, because you have done this, you're cursed more than all cattle and more than every beast of the field. On your belly you shall go, and you shall eat dust all the days of your life. Now, this sounds like it's about snakes themselves. Maybe they used to stand upright. There's no evidence of that, but it could be. But, I mean, some people like snakes, but mostly we look at snakes as like, ugh. I remember when I was a youth pastor, I took some kids out into the hills for, you know, a camping trip. And the kid said, if we find a rattlesnake, can we kill it? And I go, yeah, sure. And so they go off and they come running back and they say, this one little girl, seventh grader, hey, she killed the rattlesnake. And I'm like, oh, yeah, this is going to be good. She comes back walking up. She's a little tiny thing, and she has a rattlesnake as long as her body that she's already skinned, and she's going to lay the skin out on the rock to dry. And when I told her parents, I was like, oh, boy, they're going to kill me. They're like, oh, yeah, she does that all the time. But that's the fate of a snake. A little seventh grader can skin you and be a hero. Rattle, rattle, rattle. So he starts out with that, but then he says, I'm going to put enmity, verse 15, between you and the woman, and between your seed and her seed. He shall bruise your head, and you shall bruise his heel. This verse is so important for us, because in cursing the serpent, he talks about the seed of the woman, the offspring of the woman. And he speaks of her seed as being a singular individual who someday is going to crush the head of the serpent, even though his heel would be bruised. And this is what people call proto-evangelism, the first time the gospel is presented. What God is saying right to the serpent, rubbing his nose in it, is, look, the day is going to come when the seed of the woman will crush you, will finish you off, will kill you. You'll bruise his heel. And of course, as Jesus was hung on the cross and a nail was slammed through his feet, and all that kept him alive was pushing the pain of those feet. He had a wound in his heel that day when Jesus died. He defeated Satan forever, and his head was crushed. So that's a part of the curse that's put on Satan, is actually what happened at the cross. God goes on, and to the woman he said, "You have consequences. I will greatly multiply your sorrow and your conception. In pain you shall bring forth children. Your desire shall be for your husband, and he shall rule over you." You know, they didn't have any kids at this time. But what he said, a part of this curse is, I mean, I got good news and bad news. The good news is you're going to have a kid. The bad news is it's going to hurt really bad. But not only that, it's not just giving birth. It's having kids. It's raising them. There's nothing but pain. Her first son is going to kill her second son. So God says, this isn't going to be pretty for you. This is going to be awful. And then he says also, your desire will be for your husband. And that's a hard phrase to translate. Some people would say that it refers to the fact that she wants to be in the place of her husband. And I think sometimes that can definitely be true. And it's probably what happened when she ate the apple. It's like Adam should have been there and in charge, and he should have been dealing with it. But instead, she took the leadership. And so a part of this may be, and there are some people who say that it just means that even though men are horrible and when they make you pregnant, you're going to go through a lot of pain, you know, but still you're going to want it. You're going to come back for more. But either way, the whole thing is you're going to want something, but the truth is you're going to be dominated by a man. And however you look at it, it's undeniable. History is a story. It doesn't make it right, but history is a story of men abusing women, mistreating them, taking advantage of them. And all this is a part of the kind of death that happened as a result of people making bad choices. Every man who dominates a woman is totally in sin, but it's still, God said, it's going to happen. He doesn't want it to happen. It's not his will, but it's a result of sin.
You're listening to The Balanced Word. In addition to being our teacher on the program, Dave Rolfe is the pastor of Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel in Aliso Viejo. We're going through the Bible right now in a series called Bible Stories. We have these messages archived for you at thebalancedword.com. Or call and request today's message on CD at 949-362-7475. And as a special appreciation gift for your donation of $10 or more, The Balanced Word is pleased to send you all of these messages in this Bible Story series on a USB thumb drive. You'll hear some of the Bible's greatest stories from Genesis through Revelation. To make a secure donation, go to thebalancedword.com or call 949-362-7475. And don't forget to ask for the Bible Story series as you give. Again, we're at thebalancedword.com. And we'd like to take this time to invite you to Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel. Our Sunday morning service times are at 8, 9:45, and 11:30. Again, we're at ccpacifichills.org if you'd like more information. Or if you're outside of the area, you can watch our live stream right there at ccpacifichills.org. Check out Pastor Dave's one-minute messages, a great way to start the day. You can listen to them at thebalancedword.com or watch them on Instagram or Facebook by following CC Pacific Hills. Let's return now to Pastor Dave for more of his message centering around the fall of man.
And then he talks to Adam and he says, look, you listened to the voice of your wife and have eaten from the tree of which I commanded you, saying you shall not eat of it. Now, the New Testament, Paul tells us that through Adam, all sin entered into mankind. So, guys, remember this. The first sin was listening to your wife. But but I digress. But because of it, he said, you're going to be working all the days of your lives. There's going to be thorns and thistles. And you are going to make a living by the sweat of your brow. You're going to get up every day. And if you don't work, you're not going to eat. And your family is going to be depending on you to do that. It's going to be difficult. It's going to be hard. And you were created out of dust, and you're going to work until you return to dust. That's basically your fate for not being the man that you should have been, for not listening to me. This is the result.
Later on this week, we'll be talking about the flood and the story of Abraham. But tomorrow, we'll finish the discussion about the fall. Don't miss a moment of Dave Rolfe's Through the Bible in Story series on The Balanced Word. This program is brought to you by Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel.
Wake up, my soul. Wake up early in the day. Wake up my hands and the instrument I play. Wake up my soul.